This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, good morning, Charlie Dobbin, as you're doing a little...
It's so cold out there. We got to keep moving.
About minus 7, I think, when I left this morning.
And there was something about a wind chill that it feels like minus 16. I didn't want to look too close at that.
You're right.
But it's not really windy. But it is clear. Well, not so clear, but it's crisp.
Yeah.
Crisp.
And it's a little cloudy as I look out onto Liberty Street as we broadcast live and direct from the Zoomerplex in Liberty Village.
By the way,
I'm Frank Proctor, and
the
lady I'm talking to, and a wonderful lady she is too, would be Charlie Dobbin, who
Good
is a master
morning,
gardener.
Franklin, and
you know
all
something.
Our lovely
now I've been doing a little bit of thinking. What I sort of on the spur of the moment last week suggested for a wonderful Christmas present, you give Charlie Dobbin. You call up, make arrangements for Charlie to come to your home for your spouse, whoever.
Oh, yeah, or a son
friend.
Or daughter or something.
Yeah.
You know, when people buy a house that's particularly an existing house, they inherit a certain number of plants.
Yeah.
They come with the house. And then one of the big challenges, particularly for the younger folk, is identifying those plants and how to care for those plants.
And knowing how to plan the backyard, whatever, the front yard, whatever.
Make it better, make it more your own.
So, and that's your job.
That's
you
what
go
I
around
do.
And say, okay, here's what I'd do if I had this property, and here's how much it'll cost you, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And so there you go.
Yeah.
So anyway, if you want to jot a little note down to Charlie, And request a meeting in the new year.
You can find me on my website.
Yes.
I do have a website. Very simple. Charlie Dobbin, one word, .com or .ca, either. They both work.
Well, I'm waiting to get the bill that I get for being your agent here. Anyway, c.dobbin, D-O-B-B-I-N, at mzmedia.com. That'll do it. Okay?
That's correct. So what's your other job here, Franklin?
Oh, giving you phone numbers. Oh, gosh.
But thank you. Thank you
That's
for the promotion.
Okay. In Toronto, we'd love to hear from you. Even if you want to call and say, Merry Christmas, you guys. Okay, in Toronto, call 416-360-0740. And then anywhere in the province, it is toll-free, 1-866-740-4740. Our little mantra is really simple. Call early, call often, one question per call.
And it's a real mantra. It makes total sense.
Well,
do
absolutely.
You call early? Because the worst thing is being on hold for 20 minutes and then you don't get on the show.
Right. You left it too late.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do that.
Exactly.
And if you are a first-time caller, let Duncan, our spectacular operator, know. And he will tell me. And just before you get to the air... You'll get your garden wings.
Wings. Speaking of wings, thank you, Maureen. I got a beautiful Christmas card with
She sent me a marvelous book, and I'm trying desperately at this moment in time. Love is...
Love is Charlie Dobbin.
Yes. No. Fear. I just can't recall. But anyway, thank you, Maureen. Bless your heart.
Yeah. So thank you for the Christmas blessings, Maureen. I appreciate it. And both Maureen and I are cat lovers, bird lovers, nature lovers.
Yep.
And So you know what I discovered? I don't think I've told you this on the radio. My new house, my new property.
Yes,
and it was a couple of weeks ago walking. So the leaves have dropped at the back of the property where it's all trees.
Yeah.
There are a bunch of evergreens, but the deciduous leaves have dropped. And it's quite obvious that there's this pile of rocks, obviously like person-made pile, maybe 10 or 12 feet high, maybe 20 feet wide. Because the county is a very flat place. You just don't have hills very often. So it's a real hill of rock. So, of course, I assume that over a long period of time, whoever was farming that land was piling the rocks, and the rock pile got high and big. And it is good land.
A real monolith.
Yes, but what's most interesting to me is that that pile of rocks has been untouched for quite a long time. So trees and shrubbery and things have started to grow in amongst the rocks because, you know, organic material collected and seeds germinated, and there's little bits of mosses here and there, and it's quite a nice little place. But you know what it actually is?
What?
It's a hibernaculum.
No.
Really?
Don't say that in public too
often. I was going to say, try and cite that one, hibernaculum.
Wow.
You know what that is?
No.
I didn't think so.
I have no idea.
It's where snakes spend the winter.
Oh,
cool.
Really?
Totally cool. Oh. Speaking of the circle of life and supporting biodiversity. So the reason I'm confident in that is because one day back in the summer, I did see a garter snake up against the foundation of the house. Well, this is just like, you know, horrible construction soil and a foundation. And I'm thinking, oh, you poor little garter snake, what are you doing there? And it didn't really like me, so I was trying to not scare it. Later, when I took a little walk down into the property, sure enough, there's a whole bunch of garter snakes all hanging out on this rock pile.
In the sun, huh?
The warmth, right? Yeah. Exactly. The sun warms the rocks, and then they hang out there. It is fairly shady. So,
and what was the word again?
Hibernaculum. I'm pretty sure I've got that right. Hibernaculum. I should just double check. I'm saying that so confidently. For all I know, I'm not saying the right word.
Snake pit. That's what I'd call it. But it's a snake pit.
But it's pretty cool because that's some garter snakes, you know, milk snakes. These are all very, very low key snakes, and they eat, you know, bugs and things we don't.
When I was about 13 up at my mom and dad's cottage, I had a little garter snake that I had as a pet, and all of a sudden I couldn't find it anymore. And unfortunately, there was a seat outside, just like a wicker chair, but it had springs in it.
Oh, no.
Poor little guy. And the poor little guy, well, I guess. I finally found out, and that was in the, I can't remember what I called him, but Mr. Snake was no more, or Mrs. Snake, I don't know.
Okay, so it's too bad. That's a sad story.
Yeah.
just so you know, the definition of a hibernaculum, according to Wikipedia, is that it in Latin is a tent for winter quarters. So it's a place in which a creature seeks refuge, such as a bear using a cave to overwinter. Ah. Well, I don't have that.
No.
I don't think there's any bears.
Thank goodness. Yeah.
There are definitely coyotes, though, and foxes.
Do you know something? We have to kind of push along.
Garden show?
This is the garden show.
Oh, good point.
It's not the snake bit. It's the garden show.
Can I tell you my coyote story, though?
Oh, yeah.
It's really hard to tell how close coyote, how many there are, number one, because at two, is it 200? Because when they get yowling, it sounds like 200. So, but they're normally sort of distant, but you can hear them yipping and yowling. The other night, like 2 a.m, I swear to God, they were right outside the bedroom window.
Oh, weird.
Though they probably weren't, but they were really close. And they went up with a roar, and the two cats that were fast asleep on the bed.
weren't fast asleep anymore.
So hard, but it was very funny because, you know, everybody's fast asleep. Nobody's moving. All of a sudden, the cats bolted straight up, bounced off the ceiling and under the bed. It was like, oh, no, we're going to die. Elliot's like, what is
that? The coyotes are here. Like, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
They were close.
Okay. You know what? We do have to take a break here. We have some wonderful sponsors we have to give time to.
I know.
Okay. They pay good money for a shot at this show. Here we go. Okay. So numbers again, 416-360-0740 in Toronto. Anywhere in the province, toll free, 1-866-740-4740. And, we've got a first-time caller from Peterborough.
That arm warmed up.
You betcha. I'm reaching for the bell right now. Get prepared, Frankie. Here we go.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Okay, Charlie. Frankie's got the bell. Here we go. Hey, that's for Bill in Peterborough. Good morning, Bill. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Charlie and Frank. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Thank you. Good morning to you.
First time caller. We've listened to you for many, many years, my wife Linda and I.
Well, that's great. Now have your garden wings, so now you're an official member of the
team.
There you go. Okay. My question is, I have three maple trees in our rear yard, and all three of them, when the leaves go off, they're covered in, I think, what's called lichens.
Lichen, yep.
And lichen, is it called? And I don't see it. Well, there's a rare one around the neighborhood, but ours is the only one that I can see. The neighbors all around us, I don't see it anywhere else. I've heard this isn't a problem, but I thought I'd check it with you.
Absolutely correct. It is not a problem. What it indicates is that you have very happy trees because the lichen are lichen your trees.
Oh,
so it's a good thing. When we have lichen on our trees, there's a symbiotic relationship going on there.
Oh, okay.
So the lichen is taking advantage of the surface
that
the tree provides, and the tree is taking advantage of lichen are able to take some aspects of nutrient out of the air and make it accessible to the trees. So it's actually not at all. So if you've got lichen and nobody else does, you just pat yourself on the back and say, I've got happier trees than they do.
Hey, I'm a happy guy.
There you go. So nothing to worry about.
Is this the same thing that's on gravestones?
Usually gravestones are inert, inorganic material. Usually that's more of an algae or a moss a shady stone. Mm-hmm. But no, the tree is a living thing. So you've got the living lichen on there. And lichen's kind of cool because it comes in so many different colors. It's bright yellow and green and blue and gray. And after a rain sometimes, it'll really almost glow. You'll get that real like sort of beaming out at you.
L-I-C-H-E-N, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, gee.
Yeah.
Well, now I've learned something again today.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for calling.
Thank you for joining us. All the very best to you and yours up there in Peterborough.
Yeah.
Great spot.
It is.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Frank's reaching for the bell again.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. That's for Carol in Woodstock, another first-time caller. Hi, good morning, Carol.
Good morning. How are you?
Great, thank you.
Good morning, Carol.
Good morning.
What's going on?
Well, we have a gardenia plant that we bought in the spring, and it suffered a bit when we brought it here, but I sprayed it, and I've been giving it coffee grinds, and it was getting beautiful and blooming.
Mm.
Then I brought it inside, and I continue that same treatment, spraying it and giving it coffee grinds and keeping the soil moist and putting it in a window that's light.
Mm-hmm.
It's covered with buds, but they won't blossom, and it is losing its leaves again.
Mm-hmm. So how often are you giving it coffee grinds?
Every second day.
Mm. Okay, so what I would be inclined to do is do the coffee grinds a little bit less. Coffee grinds, I believe, are a good thing, but nothing is a good thing in excess. So remember that environment in that pot is not the same as in the ground, because in the ground we've got all kinds of microorganisms and little big things like earwigs and worms, but also very small little bacteria, etc.
Never in the ground. We left it on the pot outside.
No, I understand. But I was just going to say that all that life in the ground soil will decompose the coffee grounds.
Okay.
In a pot, you have a potting soil, which is a sterile medium, and you don't have that life. So you've got those coffee grounds just sitting there. So my point is that I would be hesitant to do too much coffee grounds. Once a month at the most is what I would do with the coffee grounds. What you're doing otherwise sounds good with a bright light, consistent watering, very important. Make sure that plant is in a fairly warm, room temperature or that kind of warm, but no drafts. The gardenias hate the cold or the warm drafts, like no vents, no windows open, that sort of thing.
It's right by a window.
And, well, it's okay as long as the window open ever?
No.
In the winter? Yeah, it's okay if it's near a window. I mean, as long as it's not touching the glass, that's fine. And you're right. The experience you're having of the beautiful buds that are just, you're teasing you because they're there and you're just waiting and they smell so great if they would just open. And then they don't. Then they just sit there and then they fall off.
Yeah.
Can be very frustrating.
Oh, golly. Yeah.
And that is a challenge with the gardenia. It's very hard to provide the levels of humidity that they want. Our homes in the winter, we're lucky to be between 40 and 60% relative humidity, but a gardenia wants 90%. So spritzing every time you think of it with a little mister, a pebble tray below, so a cookie sheet or that sort of a idea, tray filled with pebbles, water in the tray, plant on top of the pebbles means you've got that constant evaporation of moisture around the plant. That can help.
Right.
Sometimes people even group plants as little vignettes, if you will, multi-plants in a group, and then they share each other's liquids that are constantly evaporating and transpiring from the plant. So just an idea, anything you can do to increase humidity and talk to it really nicely, cross your fingers, do all
I threaten it.
Well, threatening can work, but because it's so close to Christmas, you might want to try some Christmas music and just, you know, talk to about how beautiful it's going to be. And it just needs
you're right about 2 feet away from it. So,
there you go. Yeah, they're really, really good when you can get them to go, but it is tough. It's a hard one, but it sounds like you're doing the right things.
Okay.
Good
thank
for you,
you,
Carol.
Okay. Good luck. Right.
Thank you for joining us here on The Garden Show from Zoomer Radio, AM 740. And of course, in downtown Toronto, crystal clear at 96.7 FM. And we're going to be back in just a moment to say hi to Myra, who maybe is just around the corner here in Toronto. The Garden Show, and the lines are open right now. Give a call.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All righty, Charlie, let's say hi to Myra here, who's very patiently waiting on the line. Good morning and welcome to the show, Myra.
Oh, thank you so much. And I just have to say, I love your show. I listen to you every Saturday morning.
Thank you.
That's great.
It brightens my weekend. I have a quick question about planting tulip bulbs indoors. Mm-hmm. I was given a lovely bag of bulbs last week, and it's too late to get them in the ground. Mm-hmm. And I seem to recall a year or two or three ago hearing Charlie talk about how to place the bulbs so that the flatter side either faces the outside of the pot or the inside of the pot.
The outside of the pot.
Flatter side to the outside of
that's
the pot.
Right. Now, but tell me something. So you're given this nice bag of bulbs. When you look at the bag, there's a tag at the top, and it'll tell you the name of the tulips and the height they're going to grow to and whether they're early or mid or late season tulips. Do you have it in front of you?
No, I don't.
Okay.
And actually, I can't. I can't see, so I can't read.
Oh, okay. So you wouldn't be able to figure that out. But you can feel, so that's fine.
Yeah,
so I was going to say,
feel the shape of them.
Yeah, the one thing we do know when it comes to forcing bulbs, which is what you're going to do, you're going to trick them by putting them in the refrigerator. And, of course, in the fridge, they're going to think it's wintertime and that they're outside. And then instead of leaving them till next March or April when they'll naturally wake up outside, you're going to bring them out of the fridge. If you planted them today, you would bring them out of the fridge in mid-February, like right around Valentine's Day, bring them out of the fridge, and then they'll say, oh, it's spring, time to grow, and you'll put them in a nice sunny spot, and they sure enough will grow in the pots and bloom indoors, et cetera, et cetera. The taller the plant, the more challenging it is to force, though, because they get top-heavy. So that was why I was wondering if you had that information.
Yeah.
But either way.
But my question is, did you say that I put them in the pot, plant them in the pot, and then put the pot in the fridge?
That's right. And the pot should go into a plastic bag in the fridge, water it once, put it in a dark plastic bag.
Oh.
Yeah, like
really?
a green garbage bag or any kind of a dark color.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, every time we open the fridge, the light comes on.
That's right.
So you don't want that. The tulips want to think they're underground, right? They've evolved to be underground in the cold. So that's why that dark bag they'll think that they're outside underground. So you're going to get fresh potting soil and a pot, moisten the soil, fill the pot 2/3 full, really. Jam in as many tulips as you can so that the tulips will be actually touching each other, pointy side up, flat side to the outside. And what happens when you do the flat side to the outside? It's not the end of the world, but to the outside edge of the pot, a leaf comes up where that flat side is. So the leaf will come up and then it'll flop down over the edges of the pot. So it just looks nicer. It grows nicer with all the leaves doing a beautiful kind of an overflow over the edge of the pot, and then the blooms will emerge, and you'll enjoy them, and then you'll just water as appropriate once you take it out of the fridge on Valentine's Day.
Thank you so much. I love your show.
Thank you.
Happy holidays. You know, Myra, we were talking, Charlie was mentioning about the light coming on as you open the fridge door. It always reminds me of our good friend Robbie Lane. Mm. When he opens the fridge door and the light comes on, he takes a bow. It's he's just...
I hope he's listening.
Oh, so do I. He nails me too often.
Does he?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, dear.
My chance to get back at him.
I thought you were going to say he gets his pen to sign autographs or something.
Thanks, Myra.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Myra.
Have a great day. Oh, golly. Alrighty. What time are we getting?
Another 9:30
right in the button there. And, oop. We just lost them.
You know what? The next question was a person with the same question as Myra.
Oh, that's why they ducked out.
She just got it all. Okay. But I have stuff going on. You want to do the numbers just on principle?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a complete blank monitor staring at me right in the face here.
You talking about me?
Dear, no. Pardon me. Oh,
sorry.
Don't do that to me. 416-360-0740 in Toronto. And then anywhere in the province, toll free, 1-866-740-4740. Okay.
All right. Remember, the Riverdale Hort Society meets December 11th, yep. Wednesday, this Wednesday, 7 p.m., the 816 Logan Avenue, Frankland Community Center. So that's just south of the Danforth in the area of Riverdale. It is a regular meeting, but there's a flower show and a potluck meal. So that's going to be fun, particularly on a cold night.
Well,
bring some nice hot stuff. Christmas shopping. How are you doing on that?
I'm doing okay.
Are you?
Yeah.
Put toonies into envelopes anyway?
That's for my grandkids. You're right. Yeah, I give them a certain amount of money. And in the latter years, I have actually gone to the bank and handed them a 50 and said, give me toonies, you know?
Oh, right.
And then you get one of those little tin boxes you can pick up at the dollar store, put that in, and it seems like a huge amount of money.
Right. It's heavy.
It's not that. Yeah. So I'll probably do that again.
Yeah.
You know, simple out, as it were.
Good idea. Well, if you have a gardener on your list, which you might have.
Yes,
in indeed. Amongst that large extended family you have, I received the newest copy of the newly renamed the Toronto and Golden Horseshoe Gardener's Journal. So it was called the Toronto Source Book Gardener's Journal. This is its 28th year of publication.
Unbelievable.
Very cool. It is not only a source book, but it's also an opportunity to keep track of things. So it's a source book in the sense that, you know, when's the last frost date in Toronto? And now it has extended now out to the Golden Horseshoe. So there's all kinds of great information. There's weekly tips on what to be doing in the garden or inside over the winter. There is opportunities for you to keep track, because we love something. We'll plant an annual. Good example. I planted a lot of annuals in pots back in Richmond Hill. You know, we were selling our house, you know, trying to make it pretty. So what I planted quite a few of was miniature dragon wing begonias. So dragon wing begonia gets very large. It's a very vigorous, very nice plant. But I found dwarf varieties. Sorry, now I'm choking. And they did really, really well. Yeah. Took those pots full of flowers with me when I moved out to the county, put them out on the porch. And I tell you, about an hour didn't go by and I had hummingbirds those flowers.
Wow.
Because they're, you know, bright reds and oranges. Yeah. And a begonia tends to be a nice kind of that right shape of a flower. So there's a plant I like. I like it a lot. I like it so much I want to plant it again. Will I remember that next spring when I'm shopping? Maybe not.
Maybe not.
So this is where these kinds of journals come in super handy. While you're thinking about what worked well or what didn't work well, write it down and then refer back. Because there's nothing worse than impulsive shopping in the spring purchasing things you really don't want.
Right.
And the last sort of segment of the book is literally a source book for everything you'd ever want to know. Where Perfect. Gardens to visit, books to read, radio shows to listen to, TV shows to watch.
And this is available at all good fine bookstores, I would assume.
That's a very, very good point, actually. Thank you for mentioning that. It is available at many of the very good garden centers. So you will find it at Sheridan Nurseries, at the Toronto Botanical Gardens, at RBG, the shops at Royal Botanical Gardens, the Sarnia Bookkeeper. If you have trouble finding it in your local, just send a quick email to email orders at torontogardens.com.
There you go.
And it's just a wealth of information.
Okay. Well, as you were ad-libbing happily there, you saw me reaching for the bell.
I did.
Yes, indeed. That's for Barbara in Cambridge. Good morning, Barbara. Welcome to the show.
Oh, good morning.
Morning.
Hi.
What's...
I have a... I'm not sure what the name of it is. It's one of those Hawaiian... I call it Hawaiian plant. You know, at the CNE, and that used to be able to get by the stick, and then you planted it, and you had beautiful flowers and foliage come out on them.
Is it plumeria?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
Okay, it's gotten to be at least 3 feet tall, a big, long stick, and I think I have about three or four branches off of it.
Mm.
One died, and I cut it off, and it's... But anyway, the top is where everything comes out on. In the summer, it's beautiful. The flowers are beautiful. Then I bring it in, and I leave the foliage on until it starts to turn kind of yellow, and then I do get a bug. So every year, I just snap all the leaves off and let it go dormant.
Okay.
And it works, but it's gotten so tall and just everything's on the top of the stems. I'm just wondering, how do I make it to a small one again?
So how many years have you had it?
Oh, gosh, 30.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I guess they would buy it at the CNE, I believe, when they were selling. They probably still do.
Yeah, they probably still do.
So it's a yellow one. So.
Okay, this is a tricky question because this plant is naturally a tree.
Oh,
like, it wants to be a tree. That's why it's got that stem and that growth comes out of the top every year.
Oh, okay.
So how do you force a tree to not be a tree?
I didn't realize that. I wasn't really sure what it was supposed
Bonsai.
To be.
Bonsai. Frangipani. Is it fragrant?
Yes,
yeah,
very.
It is yellow. So you might have to leave that with me. How big of a pot have you got it in?
Oh, about 10... inch,
yeah.
12 maybe.
And
it keeps going sideways on me, and I have to like kind of lift it out and straighten it up and put more soil down along the side. But it's been in the same pot for years.
It's poor tree. It's really trying to tell you something, and you're not listening. You keep trying to manipulate it to do things it really doesn't want to do.
I want it to straighten up.
It wants to be a big tree, and it wants to live
right
in your tropical rainforest, wherever that might be in your house. So
every time I put it outside, I have to lean it against the railings. So it doesn't fall over inside, lean it against the windows. Because it's all upended.
Oh, dear. Yeah, well, that does happen.
Yes.
And, of course, you don't want to put it into a bigger pot necessarily, because the bigger the pot, the bigger the plant. And already you're dealing with a big enough plant.
Yeah,
and I can't move it outside then if it gets too much bigger.
Yeah, exactly. And but it's been quite a few years, you said, since it's been in that pot.
Oh, at least, I would say, half of that, at least 15.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Sometimes what I'll do if a plant is just over-wieldy and yet I don't want it to get any bigger, but I love it, is I'll take it out of its existing pot, particularly if it's been in there for a long time, which would be a spring job, right? Early spring or summer.
Yeah.
You would take it out to the deck or the patio. You'd lay it down on its side. You'd get that pot off, which might be a challenge unto itself.
Uh-huh.
Scrub the pot because it's going to have all kinds of old salts and stuff built up inside it, and then look closely at the root ball. You may find that it's just a mass of roots and there's not a lot of soil in there anymore. Just from over the years, the roots keep growing and growing and filling the pot.
Yeah.
So that's when you get out your saw or your butcher knife and you start trimming away a bunch of those roots because there's just too many filling the pot. You've got fresh potting soil at your other hand and you get it back into the same pot with fresh soil.
Mm-hmm.
It's very invigorating to the plant to have the roots trimmed like that. And to give it fresh soil is very, very good. So you're not going to get a lot more height on a plant when you do that, but you will get a lot of side growth, and you'll get a much bushier, more balanced plant, quite likely.
Much more attractive, really.
Potentially,
it's hard to imagine anything coming out of these stems. Just like,
well, it's amazing what's dormant on that stick, that stalk.
Okay.
At each of those little rings or lines that are on the stem, each of those are nodes, and at each of those nodes, there, believe it or not, is a fast asleep little bud down there.
Okay.
And so if you can encourage some of those buds to grow, you can get a much more growth coming off the stem, which can happen.
Yeah. So what do they do, like in Hawaii? They must cut pieces off and then sell them, because I don't remember if I potted it in soil originally or...
Well,
I don't remember.
Yeah, of course, remember the things that we struggle with here and we care for so tenderly, like hibiscus is another example.
Yeah.
They just chop them down with chainsaws. And when you get into the tropics, I mean, this is a plant you just can't kill. It's a very vigorous, very big hedge type plant.
Yeah.
So it would be very similar with this. They do chop them all up, but they're not particularly gorgeous trees. They'll just cut off tops and stems and all yeah. kinds of bits of them, but they grow back, right?
Well, that's what I was thinking. Could I just yeah. chop the tops off, and, you know, down at 6 inches or something?
Yeah.
Start it again? That's what I was wondering.
You could, potentially. And we did talk a couple of weeks ago to a customer, or sorry, not a customer, but a caller on the subject of air layering as a way to separate a top and a bottom, which is an option for you as well. So if you get a chance, Google or look up in a book air layering, and that might be a way to bring it down and make the whole thing a better looking plant.
I'll just try one step. Maybe I'll try the root thing first.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us.
Wonderful holiday.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And we do have to take another little break here. This is The Garden Show from Zoomer Radio, starring Charlie Dobbin. Right there. She's gorgeous.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Okay, Charlie, let's go along to Mississauga there and greet Gloria. Hey, Gloria, good morning and welcome to the show.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning, Charlie. I got a little problem here. Back in August, a friend of mine was leaving town for about 6 or 7 months and asked me to take her three little castor bean plants.
I know what you're going to say.
And I planted them in a sunny spot. And out of the three, one grew pretty well, but not enough to produce the beans yet. So I took that plant. It's about a foot tall now, and I put it in a potting soil and brought it inside and put it in the sunniest window, and it's growing, but unfortunately, these big, I've got about five or six big leaves, they're drooping down like they're trying to go to the soil or something, but the top of it is still growing. What can I do to save this plant so I can put it back in the garden when she comes from wherever the heck she went? I can give her the plant back and she can have her bean to plant it again. I understand you can't buy these things.
Oh, yeah, you should be able to.
Okay.
You should be able to buy the seeds. Okay. Yes, I'm sure you can. The so castor bean plants are very fun, very tropical looking, become very large plants.
Yes, I know
so,
that.
And we typically plant the seeds in the spring, and then they might germinate. We plant them directly outside. It's like a bean, right? So stick in the ground, jack in the beanstalk. Overnight, it feels like a seed will germinate, and before you know it, you have a huge plant. They will grow, you know, 6 feet, 7 feet tall and 6 or 7 feet wide out in the garden. So probably what's going on in your pot at home inside is light levels. So you've got fairly low light levels and the plant, or lower than what the plant wants. And that's where the droop is coming in. And it might even be doing a certain amount of extensive, what we call stretching, when it stretches towards the light. So it's going to try and, you know, grow more heavily or more extremely on the lighter side where the windows are. So it is a hard one to grow indoors at any time, much less the low, like we're in very low light levels right now, being December the 7th. It's, we're coming up to the shortest day of the year.
Yeah, the sunniest window in my house is facing west. So I don't even have southern exposure.
And is that plant in the western window right now?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So I'm just looking, castor bean seeds, because I'm sure that you can buy them. So maybe that's what you should do, is just compost what you've got and then give her a package of seeds when she comes back.
That would be lying.
I won't tell anybody.
I told her I could save her plant.
Well, but you see, you could have held on to the seeds. You didn't need to sow them right away back in August.
Well, when she gave it to me, it was about 6 inches high.
Oh, she had started them.
She started them really late. She admitted she started it late, but then she was leaving, and so she said, save my plants.
And
well,
you call
I got
this
one that's kind of still hanging in there.
Whoa.
So it's not going to improve, is it?
No, and I wouldn't call that person a friend either. But you can get castor beans. I'm looking here quickly. Like even on Amazon, you can get castor beans. Now, just so you know and everybody else who's listening, castor beans, every single part of the plant is extremely poisonous. The beans, the leaves, the stems, they're extremely toxic plants. So when you are handling them, make sure that you're washing your hands after touching them. They can kill you. They're
really?
Yeah, yeah. They are. Ricinus is the genus. You remember ricin, that gas that somebody let in the Japanese subway one time? Yeah. Ricin is from ricinus. Castor beans are ricinus.
Ooh.
So it's very.
Okay. Thank you for telling me that. So I'm not going to touch this sucker anymore.
So I was going to say, just don't love it too much. No stroking. And I'd get some more seeds. When she comes back from her trip, just hand her a package and say, here you go. Go plant them in the spring. Enjoy them all summer. And you can typically collect seeds off of them at the end of the season.
Well, okay. Merry Christmas. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Oh, wow. That was fun, Cole.
That's a good story.
Yeah, you betcha. Woof. Off we go to Mississauga once again. Julia, good morning, Julia. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Charlie and Frank. Enjoy your show.
Good morning.
I store dahlia bulbs in my garage in an open basket where I line it with newspaper and I just kind of stack them. Mm-hmm. And I've heard you say something about keeping them damp or something.
Well, dahlias are the one that does need to be kept. Are you on speakerphone? No.
No.
No, and you don't have your radio on right now, do you? Oh,
the radio is off.
Okay. Sorry, I'm just getting a funny little feedback, but we're better now. So dahlias do, whenever I've overwintered dahlias, I have done it one of two ways. One is they're in pots outside all summer, and I just leave them in the pots all winter, but I get those pots into a frost-free location, so they're still underground, because they do want to be kept dark. And they want to be kept cool. The other way I have overwintered dahlias is in like a big, like a Rubbermaid tub full of peat moss. So clean, dry, inert, sterile peat moss that I have very lightly moistened and then drop all the dahlias in there, again, covering them with the peat moss to make sure that they are staying in the dark. Because dark is the most important thing to stop them from growing. The garage can work as long as you've got an insulated garage because you don't want them to freeze. Garages can get pretty cold.
Yeah, the garage is attached to the house, so I keep it against the wall that's close to the house. Like, I've done it pretty much every year, and I usually get about 60 to 75% return. Like, they'll start shooting. I lose a few of them.
Yeah, well, that's it. The ones on top are getting the light. So even...
But just keeping them, like, put them in some... peat moss, because I usually do have them in pots, but then I just take them out, clean them all off, let them dry, and then brush them all off, and then I put them
into a big basket.
Into this newspaper lined basket.
Right. Well, I wonder if it'd be worth almost. So you've got the pile of the tubers in that newspaper lined basket.
Yes.
Throw make sure it's clean. This is the main thing you want that potting soil or soilless mix or peat moss. Just see if you can pour some of that on top and then maybe lay some newspaper over top. And that way you've got them in the dark with the newspaper and you've still got some air circulation.
Now, could I shred some newspaper or paper and put it in there and dampen that?
You could, but be careful with too much dampening because the water's going to go to the bottom, so you don't want the ones at the bottom to rot.
So you just want it very lightly moistened.
Because don't you find they're quite wizened in the spring when you go to wake them up, that they're all kind of wrinkled and shriveled?
Yes, and some of them are overly wrinkled. But I usually get, like I said, about 60 to 75% will shoot.
Yeah, so that's not bad. It's a fine line. Too much water, they rot, and too little water, they shrivel up and die. So a little bit of moisture is a good idea.
Okay, maybe this year I'll try half with moisture and half the way I normally do it.
All right, let us know how that works out.
Yeah, okay, great. Thank you very much. Thanks. Have a good day.
Thank you, Julia. We have to take our final little break here, and then we're coming back to say hi to Catherine in Richmond Hill, your old stomping grounds, right after these words.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All right, Charlie, here we go to Richmond Hill, and there's Catherine. Good morning, Catherine.
Oh, hi. Good morning, Frank and Charlie.
Good morning.
Hi. I have a question about my Christmas cactus.
Mm-hmm.
It is sitting in a 6-inch pot and it's about 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, when I wasn't watching it, it started to bloom.
That's good.
Oh, wow.
And then it shriveled. It's out in the lobby, so I don't watch it all the time. My question is, how do I make it to grow even more profusely?
Okay, out in the lobby. Are there windows in the lobby?
Yeah. The windows are about 4 feet away from the lobby.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what direction does that face? Is it bright and sunny? Does the sun come through the windows?
It does, but not enough because my lobby faces the west.
Oh, right. So you get some late afternoon. Mm. Do you have curtains on those windows or shears or blinds?
Just some of the shades, you know, the... Okay. The plantus shades, you call
it? Yeah. So, I mean, so a plant like that, the Christmas cactus, it is naturally evolved as a plant that grew in the forest down under trees and things. So it likes bright light, but it likes a bit of shade, a bit of light. It likes to dry out pretty thoroughly between waterings.
Okay.
And it's pretty comfortable with cool temperatures. And I find that a cool temperature is something that will always cause a Christmas cactus to set blooms. Or buds. And so that if you can sort of provide the environment that it's naturally evolved for, which sometimes we can, many people have great success. Actually, I got an email. I'm sorry, I forget the name the person sent me an email. She said she took her Christmas cactus on a cool day back in November and just put it out for the day and then brought it back in. It was just like hovering around zero, but over the day, brought it back in. And sure enough, like a day later, Boom. It was covered in flower buds. And she said, you know, that worked pretty good. That was a real kickstart for some buds, just giving it that cool temperature. So, you know, they're all kind of on the verge of flowering now. They want to flower. This is their time of year. So give them anything you can to provide that. A lobby should be fine. A foyer where there's the cool draft coming in and out when the door opens. One of the plants that would like that is the Christmas cactus.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Good.
So just avoid hot drafts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, and only water when dry. Be very, very careful. You don't overwater. Feel that soil. You want it nice and dry. Crank a little fertilizer on it if you like at this time of year. Just, you know, flowering plant fertilizer and that may kickstart.
Okay.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Thank you, Catherine.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's good news.
Yeah. That should work out just fine.
Okay.
Thanks, Catherine.
We have to press along here. We have one final caller that we're going to squeeze in Brantford. Thomas on the line. Good morning, Thomas.
Oh, good morning. My question is, when I cultivate my garden, I find very few worms.
Mm-hmm.
And at one time I heard the lady say that if you put mulch leaves on your garden over the winter, the worms will take them down.
Absolutely.
That doesn't happen in my garden.
Do you put leaves in the garden?
I put mulch leaves over my raised beds.
Oh, good. And are the leaves, what kind of trees are you collecting the leaves from?
Linden and maple.
Oh, okay. So that should be perfect. And how long have you been doing that? For a couple of years or?
Maybe 20.
Oh, really?
Oh,
and you don't see a lot of worms. Do the leaves disappear? Do they actually?
No.
Okay. So you know what you need? So the leaves are good because the leaves are organic matter and there are microorganisms and macroorganisms like worms that will chew up that organic matter. The thing is they have to be present. So you're not going to, you could go to the store and buy some worms, pretend you're going fishing, you know, in the spring or summer, buy worms, start a process. But what I would do is I would make a real effort next spring, because it'd probably be hard to get now, is get a hold of some composted manure. It could be cow, sheep, horse,
whatever.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's got great microscopic microorganisms in it. You're going to sprinkle that on top of those leaves that you put on in the fall. The rain is going to fall. We're going to get moisture. We've got all the biology there. We've got the organic material. It will start. It'll start to chew up and chow down on all those leaves and the worms will come.
Okay. I usually put a compost on in the spring. So you're telling me to do it when I coat the leaves over the flower beds.
That's right. Like I would do it at any time. The sooner you can introduce life into your soil, like the leaves are a good start, but you still need some bacteria, you still need some microorganisms, and the worms, believe it or not, will come.
Would the soil test be beneficial?
Always a good idea. If things aren't making 100% sense, definitely there's wonderful soil testing labs at the University of Guelph that are part of OMAFRA. So if you have access to the internet, you just Google soil testing labs, Ontario Ministry, Agriculture and Food, and it comes up with all the addresses.
Okay, thank you very much. I really appreciate that.
You're
well, thank you
welcome.
For joining us,
thanks for calling.
Thomas. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And gee whiz, look at that. We're at a racetrack.
How does that happen?
I don't know. We're at the checkout counter, for gosh sakes. We got to
But you said Toby's in a Christmas
I got a call the other day, or a text actually, saying, enjoying watching your son Toby in the movie Merry Matrimony. I didn't even know. It was shot in 2015. Merry Matrimony.
Is it a Christmas thing?
Yeah. Oh. Christmas movie.
Right. Merry. Okay.
2015 it was shot. But he plays a character, Phil. I've not seen it, so I'm dying to.
Better get on that.
Well, you're darn right.
You're so busy being my agent, you need to be your son's agent. Thanks a lot, Frank. Have a great week. Thanks so much, Duncan. See you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.